Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it. Great to have you on Wednesday. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, and lots to get to with some Nebraska football. We've got a Twitter fire to talk about. J.D. Spielman has responded to some comments about the receiving crew.
Never a dull day, is there?
It's not, man. And if you're a player, you can only take so much before you have to respond and set the record straight. Mike Babcock, Husker historian, author, Hall of Famer, going to be with us. We'll look into 2020 with Nebraska football. Mike Shuard in 30 minutes. Shuey from Wilderness Ridge. Brad Edwards in hour two. And Jacob Padilla going to join us. Jacob has a really good feature in the Hail Varsity yearbook on the Nebraska offensive line. You can join us at 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Just got a question for you. And do you know someone, or do you tweet at players or tweet at recruits? And if you do, you do. We talk 2 hours a day, 6 days a week about players. I think we're pretty fair about players, where it's they're college kids, and when we get into some pro stuff, there can be criticism. Lord knows I don't line up in the slot or out wide to go try and catch a football. I'd never get off a defensive back's jam. Couldn't do it. Not very quick or athletic. Love the game. Love talking sports. Blessed to do it. Blessed to do it as long as I've done it. But let's kind of set the table for you. And this came to my attention. Greg Smith, tremendous job with Hail Varsity, quote tweeted a response from J.D. Spielman on Twitter. Let's get you caught up with that. And maybe this is too tabloid. I know we'll get into some more substantive stuff, but hell, why not? Let's get a bowl of popcorn here. So what happened is this. You got a guy named Derek on Twitter. And I don't know if he's done a blog in the past or what. But he lives in Nebraska. And Derek throws out this on Twitter. Still bothers me about J.D. Spielman. Two of his better friends on the team were Mike Williams and Javon McQuitty. So much so that he didn't want to stick around after they were gone. Does that say something if you're that good of friends with two underachievers? So this guy calls out Mike Williams and Javon McQuitty as underachievers. Listen, we talk a lot of recruiting. We touch on stars. You don't know. How many times do we have Charlie McBride on during the week? Or do we talk to a former player that has had a good Husker career or had a role at Nebraska over a five-year period? It is hard. It is absolutely hard to make a dent in major Division I college football, let alone in a Power 5 league like the Big Ten. On a team like Nebraska, you got 150 guys that they bring in a new crew each year to try and take your job. So there's depth and talent, and there you go. So it's hard. It's hard to go from a bunch of different reasons, from your level of competition to understanding what you're supposed to do on the field, acclimating to life. I was a screwball till I was probably about 30, let alone having to juggle football in school. Maybe some will argue, if you ask my wife, I'm still a screwball. Point of it is you've got this criticism on Twitter. And this, I don't know if I'm going to call him a Nebraska fan, but I will say he's a Nebraska enthusiast, was quote tweeted by J.D. Spielman. And Spielman, because he said nothing, right? Spielman's done no commentary on why he's leaving. And listen, there's rumors, there's truth, there's innuendo. You and I, Elijah, have a couple of thoughts on some of the rumors that have been out there. And listen, you had Spielman respond. And none of my friends are underachievers. We showed up to work every day. No, we ain't trying to protest no practice. none of that. I got too much love for my brothers to let you talk crazy like this. So Spielman addressed the rumor out there about not wanting to go practice outside in the cold.
And he also included two emojis in that tweet, which are the clown emojis.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fair, calling the guy a clown.
Sure. And most of Nebraska fans have just destroyed this guy. And this guy is kind of shooting his mouth off on Twitter, which is what Twitter welcomes. That's why the platform's there. Not the sole reason for it, but it is an outlet. And there's trolls, there's fans, there's people who voice their opinion, and you have the option not to follow them or respond. But JD had had enough. He had responded. The response from Mike Williams and Javon McQuitty, we've sat down a couple of different times with Mike Williams, good ball player. And when we talked with Russ Landy, Russ thought that Mike might have a shot in the CFL. So this is the response from Mike Williams to this Nebraska fan named Derek, or this guy who paints himself as a Nebraska enthusiast. Calling him a Nebraska fan puts him into the category of those who don't tweet at or criticize or throw bricks at players, okay? So Mike's response, check my film prior to Nebraska and tell me how many times I lined up an outside wide receiver. So, again, this is Williamson. Don't call me an underachiever, man. I was out of position.
I was doing what I could.
I was doing what I could. And more from Williams. Underachiever, bro, please shut up. I was out of position my entire time at Nebraska, so please don't speak unless you know everything that went on, period. Peon, period. And then you've got the McQuitty response.
This one's the doozy.
Yeah, Javon McQuitty opens up a little bit about maybe how he was feeling and some of the receivers that were there when Nebraska's new staff arrived. What do you got?
Oh, you want me to read it?
That's what I'm trying to get you to do.
Ah, sorry. I got to pull it up right here. He says, underachiever, don't get me started on how them coaches dogged all the wideouts and never even gave us a chance to show our potential. And already had who they wanted to play regardless of how good you practiced.
Ooh. So McQuitty's like, say, the insinuation is Frost had his guys and played his favorites.
And this is not the first time I have heard of this personally.
No.
I've talked to friends on campus who are close to people on the team and even a couple people on the team who have
intimated that.
Said the same thing.
Here's what I got. And listen, you don't have Coach Walt, he touched on the part about Walters as well.
Yeah, that's down below. Some fan responded to him and essentially said, isn't that Coach Walters is gone now. We have Coach Lubick who could be, you know, a little bit more unbiased. And he says, little do you know, Walters never called the plays or controls who got in. It's the head man. Walters just took the blame.
Okay. Well, I know that Scott Frost called the plays. And I have no doubt Scott Frost wanted who he wanted as a personnel guy. It's just getting messy. We need football to start, right? First of all. Second of all, JD responded. Mike Williams responded. JD stuck up for Mike Williams. JD stuck up for McQuitty. McQuitty claimed that they were playing favorites. And I know McQuitty got injured. I was always kind of waiting on him to do something. And with McQuitty, yeah, you had too many body types that were similar. So once Stanley was gone, who did you have playing on the outside? I mean, Spielman and Williams had to play on the outside. Look, there's a lot of reasons that if you go to the coaches to respond to this, and they won't probably waste their time with it, could tell you why. Here's why you didn't get on the field. Here's why we didn't go to you. or here's why we played other people in that spot. Really, when I think of receivers, I mean, I think Wandale Robinson was pretty awesome and came in and did his thing. When I think back to year one, I mean, you didn't see a lot of Jerron Woodyard, and that was a Frost guy or more so a Walters guy. Williams did get in from time to time, okay, but was asked to – this staff has guys cross-train, right? And it happens in the secondary, so you need to learn safety, you need to learn corner, even though you're probably a corner, just as an example. And they cross-train. They cross-train clearly so they can line up guys on different spots on the field.
Well, yeah, think about the offense.
Right.
The offense is all about motioning and getting good matchups that you want. And I think
so you need to learn multiple positions.
Yeah, the offense wants a receiver.
And be good at multiple positions.
They want a receiver who can play inside and can play outside. And you look at Wandale, he can even line up in the backfield. That's what they want with their receivers is the versatility.
Sure. And some guys are better at that than others. And for McQuitty to finally kind of just come out and say, you know, the insinuation of playing favorites, you know, I don't – McQuitty was here a long time. Right. And the guy went through a lot of position coaches, went through coaching changes, dealt with injury.
Two major knee injuries, I think.
Well, and he had a shoulder, too.
And a shoulder. Well, he had the knee injury coming in. Mm-hmm. I believe he had senior year. And I think he had another knee injury his sophomore year.
And I remember seeing ice on his shoulder.
Yeah.
So it was just a tough situation. So you have some backlash here from some of the former receivers at Nebraska. Mike Williams graduated. Spielman is in the transfer portal. And you have McQuitty that – did he end up playing somewhere or did he retire?
That's a good question. Let's see.
I think he graduated, but I think he's just done. Because he was one of the guys to leave in 2019, correct? Pretty recently?
Yeah.
So
I'll scroll through his Twitter and see if there's any.
Here's the thing. I think there's some truth to here's the receivers we want that are versatile, that are probably better fits, but you gotta make dinner with the groceries you got, okay? And you need to make do with what you inherited. And that's been a source of criticism, and that's been reality that Nebraska's not what they came into was not a good situation. All right. Whether it's personnel or culture or go down the list, it's different than what Scott Frost wanted from a strength and conditioning standpoint. That's all been touched on. Okay. And a lot of coaches don't go public with that. Coach Frost has been pretty, here's what I've got. He's going to tell it to you straight. And yeah, you've got a rift and you've got, as much as you might have Frost guys, you probably still have some Riley guys. Not anymore. I mean, I think they're all gone. But that's just it. It butted heads. And it didn't for sure because they're two different offensive systems translate. I mean, a guy can line up and go run a dig route or a curl or a fly or a slant. The routes are the routes in any offense, right? But when it comes to fit with what you want to do, Nebraska's had Wandale Robinson, a Frost guy, perform and produce. J.D. Spielman's done the same thing. And then Stanley Morgan. You've got a little bit of Stoll. But as far as the wideouts, I mean, and Scott Frost touched on the receiver spot with his Q&A with Tom Chattel in the World Herald that was published yesterday as far as, you know, the wide receivers. Because that was, you know, a question here with the Q&A. And a lot of things were touched on with the Q&A, but it kind of comes down to expectations with the pandemic. That was the last question by Chattel to Frost in the Q&A. And, you know, will this pandemic hurt pretty much how good this team can be? That's not the exact question, but, you know, it's too early to tell is Frost's response. He feels better about the talent now than any time since he's been here. And he feels better about the attitudes and relationship of the team, which is there. And he did touch on the wide receivers. When he got here, this is Frost in the Q&A, the receivers' spot was not as deep or what we needed. when we got here. It's the wide receiver group still a work in progress.
Yeah, it's still not deep or what you need.
Well, no, and I'll tell you this. Nebraska went after some monster fish the last 2 years of the Riley regime on the recruiting trail, and they finished second a couple of times. They didn't get some big-name guys that ended up going to USC, and coincidentally, some of those kids aren't even at USC anymore. One dude got booted out of school. And then what Nebraska tried to get from the JUCO ranks didn't necessarily translate. So it's just a mess at receiver. You have three receivers responding to a guy that follows Nebraska football's assertion as to why Spielman left, and pretty much calling a couple of other guys underachievers. And the kids that used to wear that red N on their helmet have had enough, and good for them speaking out.
The wide receiver position has just been such a point of contention this offseason, I think because it feels like the only position that's really taken a step back since Scott Frost has arrived. I felt better with JD and Stanley here than I do with the current crop receivers. They're unproven. There's a lot of potential there. Mm-hmm. But I think, is that why it's such a point of contention?
Listen, man, it makes a big difference when you can come in and your offense can throw the football to a guy named Stanley Morgan. Big-time difference. He's a playmaker. He's a winner. And then you pair him with Spielman. Great. You lose one of those, you can kind of clamp down on the other. Mike Babcock's next on Hail Varsity.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome.
Back with you. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Brett Edwards coming up. Jacob Padilla going to join us. Mike Babcock with us now at MD Babs on Twitter. Babbers, how's your Wednesday, man?
Hey, going well. No complaints. Really a nice day, I think.
It is. A little windy out, but that's all right. Better than the copious amounts of rain we've had in the last 24 hours or so. And you know, we just spent, I didn't plan on going, hey, wow, let's spend 15 minutes on somebody that's got a Twitter handle questioning effort and intensity from kids that played at Nebraska. Can we take a deep breath, Babbers? You know, if you're a Nebraska fan, this isn't the majority of Nebraska fans, but I think you have three wideouts that aren't part of the program anymore. And you have Mike Williams, who graduated, and of course JD is off, and McQuitty also has left the program. Guys that had enough about being questioned, and you've covered this football team a long time. I have not seen players respond publicly like this before, and then kind of take it a step further and question their playing time by their former head coach.
Well, Twitter changes the dynamic in that situation. Yeah, I don't like to see people criticize players, whether they get on the field a lot or they don't get on the field a lot. That, you know, it requires a tremendous amount of commitment to compete at this level, at the major college level. And that, by compete, I don't just mean getting in games and doing it. I mean every day in practice, coming to practice and doing all the things that are expected of you. It's a year-round deal, with strength and conditioning and all the demands that go with it. So I don't like to see people question student athletes in any sport, because I don't think that they understand how much goes into it. And it's unfortunate that somebody felt like they had to refer to McQuitty and Williams as underachievers. I'm glad that, you know, JD stood up for them. And I hope for the best for JD. You know, he talked to reporters when he was a freshman. I talked to him a couple of times. He's a very engaging young man. I just hope for the best for him. I wished he would have stayed here. I think he's a tremendous talent, but that was his decision. And again, the work that you put in, if you're not happy here, then you move along. Yeah, don't criticize guys. Don't refer to them as underachievers when you don't have any idea what kind of work they put in.
Mike Babcock's with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Babbers, I want to get your thought here with, you know, what Nebraska can do And I don't know how you expedite, but the reality is this, and I was looking at Tom Chattel's Q&A with Coach Frost, and I know you and Tom have covered the team for a number of years, and when you mix in the pandemic, I mean, and Coach Frost pointed this out, that not only did they not get the majority of their spring football, but there's been no postseason, so there's no 15 bowl practices or 10 bowl practices. So you do the math, and Nebraska is 30 practices behind probably many of their opponents on the 2020 schedule. Is there any way to close that gap, considering, okay, the hope is the first part of August you can actually put the pads back on? I mean, it's insult to injury here is how I look at it.
Yeah, you know, it's true. I think it's probably more of a factor when you're trying to build something, and that's what Scott's trying to do here. You know, you're coming off two losing seasons, and you're trying to take that next step and get back in the swing of things. Because, I mean, everybody's in the same boat. I mean, nobody played in bowl games. Nobody had the practices then. Spring practice was wiped out for everybody. Nobody can start, you know, any sooner than anybody else. It's just uncharted territory. But when it's more difficult if you're trying to get somewhere that you haven't been in a while, and I think that's where the problem comes in for Nebraska, is that it's been a while for Nebraska to be where people expect it to be, I guess, where the fans expect it to be, where the administration expects it to be, where the coaches expect them to be, and that's where the lack of opportunity to have the spring practice and the extra practice of bowl time, although Nebraska couldn't have done that anyway, right?
Right. They didn't qualify.
Yeah, they didn't qualify. So, you know, that's not that you don't look at it that way. That part of it doesn't come in. They wouldn't have got that. They didn't get that anyway. So, the big thing is the spring practices, and when fall camp can begin. And again, that affects you most when you're trying to get somewhere that you're trying to build something, and it makes it more difficult.
Mike Babcock's joining us here at MD Babs on Twitter. Babbers, let's talk about Adrian Martinez, the quarterback, and I'm so excited for the yearbook, and we'll get to some of your features and stories in a moment. Really enjoyed posting on the website by Derek, Most Intriguing Huskers, Derek Peterson. And, you know, there was some good and some inconsistent from Adrian. And if you had to pick one of the several factors that affected him last year, what do you think was most of an issue for him?
Well, you know, we didn't know the extent to which, you know, he wasn't healthy. I mean, there was a health issue there, and you can say, well, it was his, you know, wasn't his throwing shoulder and all that sort of thing. But that's going to affect you. I think that's a significant thing. You know, you're more hesitant probably, even though you don't think you are. You tend to be, I think, when that's a consideration. So I think that's one thing. I do think, as I've said before, once teams have the video of a full season of what he's played, then they are able to make adjustments and prepare for the way he plays. And then the other thing that you have to take into consideration is the play of those around him. So what kind of play does he get from the offensive line? What kind of support does he have in terms of a running game? You know, it got to the point where JD and Wandale were the prime targets, and they were taking big hits, and their health was a consideration there from the hits they were taking, and Mills didn't get to the point that he needed to be probably until later in the season. So all these factors go together to affect a quarterback, and I don't know if I can say that there was one thing, but I certainly think that it would. You know, health would be one thing that's really important for a football player, and particularly, again, for a quarterback.
I think you're right on. And again, yeah, it wasn't just one thing, but you have health and then you have the offensive line and what was around Adrian. And was that, it was kind of a Murphy's Law set up last year on offense from time to time where it just wasn't clicking as well as it did his freshman season. And he had some more options his freshman season, specifically a guy like Stanley Morgan to either get to or at least kind of open things up for other options. You had Divine Ozigbo do his thing with the run game as he really came on in 18. And Mills had a really nice finish to last season, but you saw kind of a later pop in 2019 from him. But, it's a nice preview of things to come. Mike, with the yearbook that's coming out for Hail Varsity, kind of run that down real quick. Some things that Nebraska fans are excited for that they'll be sure to see and can't probably wait to get their hands on here for this this upcoming preview this summer.
Well, there's some really, you mentioned the offensive line story that Jacob wrote, and Derek Peterson did a nice 10 years in the Big Ten story. Aaron Sorensen has got a nice story on DiCaprio Boodle. Greg Smith's got a really good one on Wandale Robinson. Not the superficial kind of stuff, the deep dive kind of thing. All those stories where they talk to several people that are involved in those areas. And I just think that those are a very positive things, and we're going to have some insight too, I think, from Josh Mitchell and some racial related things from players that have been here and how they perceive things. It's difficult to describe, but it's going to be very I think very insightful and very necessary at this in this time and place. So, I think the yearbook's going to be really special. I'm glad that we had the opportunity to go ahead and do it because I was starting to wonder whether we would, given the pandemic and what was going to happen there. But I've seen some other college football magazines on the newsstand already. So. We're proceeding as if there's going to be something there, but I think this is going to be as good a Hail Varsity yearbook as we put together.
I can't wait. Babber's about a minute. You're commissioner for a day. How do you get baseball to fix things?
Oh boy, I don't know. Let's all go in a room and don't come out till we get something settled. I don't know. There's too much.
Leave your bats at the door.
You can't force them to do something they don't want to do.
I like how you just went, you only got a minute left, so here's the hardest question that I'm going to ask you today.
Babbers has the magic wand for it all, and he just gave you the answer. You're all going into a room, and you're not coming out until we get an answer. That's perfect, Babbers.
Yeah. Well, the answer might be we don't have an answer, and then let us out of here.
Yeah. Hey, we'll see you in 2021, and again, we'll have no fans.
Well, we can't put them in a room anyway. It'd have to be
a Zoom meeting.
So you can't do it that way, so there's going to be no claustrophobia to force them into a situation.
Well, all right, there we go. So a Zoom meeting until the web gives out. Pretty good. Mike, awesome to chat with you. Thanks for a few minutes today, man.
Hey, good talking to you guys.
All right, Mike Babcock with us, Hail Varsity Magazine, hailvarsity.com. We'll spend a few minutes with Jacob Padilla and get into some of the offensive line thoughts, some thoughts on Mr. Fedoni. Is he a Nebraska lean? We'll get into some golf. Mike Shewhart's on the way. Wilderness Ridge Golf, Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Working through a Wednesday, Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbo. We say hi to Mike Shewhart. Shuey is with us. He's out at Wilderness Ridge. Shuey, do you have that ball cap extra tight today, my man?
It's getting nicer out now. This morning, not so nice. But now, man, the sun's coming out. The wind's trying to die down.
It's perfect.
Yeah, it's turning out to be a nice day.
It's perfect bourbon weather on the deck out at Wilderness, and it's even better weather to be sinking a putt. I checked in with my mother earlier. Her and my father were out there swinging away. I don't know how many swear words, or I should say how many contributions to the swear jar at the Schmidt household have been uttered. But how's your week been, man? Tell us what you've been up to and what's going on at Wilderness. And I know you've been doing the Fit Friday thing, so give us a heads up on that.
Yeah, it's been good. We got our juniors started, so good. My divot dogs. So we got two practices under our belt, and then tomorrow they have their first tournament out of Firethorn on the short course out there. So it's exciting to see them get back in action. And then our Wednesday Junior League. So we had those kids out the last couple of weeks, giving them some lessons, getting them on the course, playing some golf. So that's been good. And then fitting people with golf clubs and just doing our golf thing.
I love that. I love that. Shuey, a thought from you on what the PGA Tour is going to do to honor George Floyd, and I thought it was a heartfelt gesture.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty impressive what they're doing. Pretty much needed, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what's happening, what has happened, what is happening. Needs to change, you know, and the people with big voices, PGA Tour, other sports entities, you know, are in a position to help make some really good changes so we can start to eliminate racism out there.
That's the way to be, absolutely. Shuey, with the competitive golf set to come back here, give us kind of a rundown here on the Charles Schwab Challenge here. What's the feeling like, in your opinion? I mean, I know you're able to kind of check in and see, and you got contacts all around the tour. And our guys are anxious to get back, but it's got to be a little different, a little weird for them too, correct?
Oh, no question. I mean, just with some of the things they have to do. But that's easily kind of overlooked or, you know, because they're just so anxious to get back out and play, mm-hmm. get competitive again. I mean, they've been so long since they've been able to do anything, and that's what they do. You know, they love to play. They love to compete at the game. That's how they make their living, you know. So being away from it, you know, has made them all that much more hungry to get out there. And obviously the field shows it. You got 16 of the top 20 players ranked in the world playing in the field. So it's like guys are chomping at the bit to get back out there and start playing some golf.
What's the course like? I mean, what are some challenges that they're going to endure this weekend?
Colonial is a little different golf course. It is it's a ball strikers golf course because it's not super long, but it's pretty tight. Very old traditional style golf course. You know, that's why you see kind of some of the same names that are really competitive there. Zach Johnson, not the longest hitter, very accurate, great short game. So you're going to need to have some control of your golf ball. It's not one of those courses you can just stand up there and bomb it and try to overpower it. So you got to have a little precision in your game and a little smarts.
Well, the control part, some of us are still searching for. Mike Schuart's with us. He's out at Wilderness Ridge, Wilderness Ridge Golf. We check in with Shuey every Wednesday at 4:40. Shuey, a thought here on Brooks Koepka. Not sure if he wants to play with the Ryder Cup if there's not going to be fans. And how much energy and juice did you get from the gallery?
A lot, especially in that venue. That's the one venue that would be very, very weird to play in without the fans, because they're such an integral part of what makes the Ryder Cup what it is. You know, you've seen it the last couple of years when it's got super competitive with, you know, Patrick Reed out there, you know, making bombs and getting the crowd riled up. You know, so it's like the good guys against the villains, and then over here it's we're the good guys, over there we're the villains. So it's such a great environment. and without the fans there, kind of loses a lot of its environment. Still the Ryder Cup, but man, the Ryder Cup is very, very fan integral to make it as exciting as it is. So that's going to be a strange one. I can see why you'd say that. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, because it's like he plays a lot for the fans, you know? He goes out there as an entertainer to entertain them in what he does. And also, it's like if they're not there, it's like it loses a little bit of its excitement. It's still a Ryder Cup, though, man. You're representing your country. That's enough for me.
No, I'm with you on that.
Mike, one of the ways that the Peyton Manning, Tom Brady Golf Challenge made things interesting for fans was they mic'd up the players and allowed you to hear what they were saying. Do you think that professional golfers would be willing to do the same thing?
I think so. I think that kind of proved how well it was received. You know, you hear all of the different comments afterwards, how much people liked it, you know. A lot of people tuned into it, I think, one, because they were just starved for something to do, and I think they were very surprised and entertained how entertaining it became by doing that. I think you're going to see a lot more of that. Now, doing it in a tournament, I don't know if they'll do that or not. That's a little scary because there's been a few cuss words thrown around out there when we hit bad shots, believe it or not.
So you're like everybody else. You just don't hit as many bad ones.
That's right.
Well, who's the best swearer on tour?
Oh my! I mean, all pretty good actually.
Phil? Is it Phil?
I mean, some people are artful with it, though, right?
Some are very artful. They're very tactful. The foreign players are the best because they can yell whatever they want. Nobody understands what they're saying, so they're cussing all the time. You just don't know what they're saying.
Mike, do you know? Are there any Philip Rivers out there? Are there any guys that just don't cuss?
Oh yeah. There's a few. There's quite a few actually. So Mike Reed was actually when I was a rookie coming out, he was my big brother is what they call it. So they paired a rookie with a veteran.
Cool.
So he was my veteran player, and he was what's his name? Leave it to Beaver, Mr. Cleaver.
Sure.
He was him, man, to a T. Or Mr. Rogers. Either one of those guys. And I was not a Mr. Rogers. I was a Khalid opposite. So I don't know why they paired us together because we were like polar opposites. Maybe they're trying to teach me something.
Were you a George Carlin?
Pretty much.
Pretty good. Mike Shewhart, go see Shuey this Friday, Fit Fridays. What time, Shuey? About 30 seconds, bud.
3 to 7. Three to seven. Make sure you call and get an appointment. So we're only doing Fit Fridays with appointments. So as long as we got somebody scheduled, we'll be out there fitting away.
Well, and go see Shuey to work on that that struggle on the tee box or inside 100. Shuey, you be good. It was fun to chat, buddy. Thank you much.
Always, man. Thanks for having me. Enjoy it. Be safe.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Cowan. And more fireworks going on Twitter. Keith Williams kind of checked in with his former guys and just said no, with the former Nebraska wideouts responding to a person on Twitter this insinuating the reasons why Spielman left the football team and calling a couple of Spielman's teammates, former Nebraska wide receivers, underachievers. Those two wideouts, Javon McQuitty, Mike Williams, have responded to the person on Twitter that was questioning their effort, and Spielman responded, engaged this guy. And Spielman was saying, look, you don't know what the reason is. Shut your mouth. And you had McQuitty kind of take it a step further with blame towards Frost playing favorites. And you had Keith Williams around 4:25 say, look, no. All he said was no. It's like, shut up, guys. Quit talking. Don't respond to somebody like that.
All right, especially like whenever you see Mike Williams possibly getting a CFL chance, you don't want to see him hurting himself because of tweets.
Well, it is so hard to go high road, right?
It is
so hard to go high road, especially if you're a player that's put in time to try and do your best.
Mm-hmm.
no matter what staff you're on or who recruited you. I mean, you take that. You don't want to go out. You don't want to be on teams that went 5-7, 4-8.
And you can only take so much.
I get it. Well, and it comes with maturity for all of us, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, who hasn't wanted to respond to someone who's been piling on? And that comes down to just road rage driving, right? Let alone getting on social media.
And the thing about the tweets is, I think the players see a lot more of the tweets than the people who are sending them actually realize. So hopefully that's proven today. Stop tweeting at players. Stop tweeting at recruits.
Well,
it's unnecessary.
Just be a freaking normal person.
Exactly.
Right? Let's tell you about two normal folks that are incredible. They'll help you move that house if you're moving in 2020. West Blue Realty is who I'm talking about. And West Blue specializes in residential home sales in Lincoln and the surrounding communities. They'll make this move in 2020 a smooth one for you. For a limited time, you mentioned Hail Varsity, and West Blue Realty can provide you up to $1,000 on the closing of your next home purchase. Give Tom Luby a phone call at 402-540-3768. Kelly Hofschneider. Kelly can help at 402-202-2312. It pays to work with West Blue. WestBlueRealty.com. Do you have agricultural land? And if so, and you're looking to move it, West Blue can help there. They have an auctioneer. They can handle live auctions, sealed bids, general land listings, and they've sold land in Seward, Otoe, and Lancaster counties. They can handle a large radius. They are at 1120 K Street, Suite 200. Excited to talk to Brad Edwards, man. We'll kind of get back with Brad here about those coaching jobs. We spent a lot of time talking tiers, and Nebraska's a tier three job when it comes to access to talent. You had a tier one coach in Coach Osborne and Coach Devaney, but the program's standing and luster is still high for Nebraska fans, but nationally, I mean, you're trying to get back to being bowl eligible, right? So Nebraska's dipped a bit to a tier three. Tough job. Very tough expectations, but very rewarding if you can get it done. Reggie Bush is now back in the circle of friends with USC. That's interesting. And Paul Feinbaum pretty much laying the gauntlet down about Nick Saban. You got to win a title. We'll lay out some college football with Brad Edwards. Jacob Padilla up next hour as well. Hour two on the way.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Into Hour 2, it's Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbo, we welcome in ESPN College Football Insider. Part of College Game Day, we say hi to Brad Edwards, at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter. Brad, what's new? How are you?
It's same old here. Just dealing with the same old things. We're just 1 week closer to kickoff. I guess that's the best way to put it.
You know what? 1 week closer to kickoff is a welcome statement, isn't it? And I want to start off with kind of your reaction to what's gone on at Iowa with their strength and conditioning coach being put on leave. The coach's son, the strength and conditioning coach's son, has entered the transfer portal. What's been your reaction and read on how Kirk Ferentz has handled things and some of the accusations and feelings of former Hawkeyes coming out? What's been your read on it?
Yeah, I think we're going to see more of this type of thing, and I'm guessing that this came out because of what happened at Clemson or what was said at mm-hmm. Clemson.
Sure.
And just more generally, my hope is that we're getting to a point where student-athletes feel like someone has their back, okay? And look, it's really not student athletes. It's people in general, you know, that they have the ability to speak out against things that are wrong, and know that someone is not only listening, but that someone cares, and that things aren't just going to get swept under the rug. And I realize that stuff like that doesn't happen overnight. I know that there, you know, a lot of institutions in this country where people who wield power can still control a whole lot of things and keep voices from being heard for a certain amount of time. But I think that's changing. And so, I hope that when it comes to matters of racism, whether that actually happened at Iowa or not, certainly something happened. I hope that there are more people who feel like not only they can speak out, but that they should. And they don't have to worry about what's going to happen to them because of it. And I think when that stuff becomes more accepted, that people can speak without having to worry about any type of retaliation coming against them, that's where change is going to come. It's when people can really say what's on their mind and share their experiences, and they don't have to, be fearful of what's going to happen because of it.
Brad Edwards with us, Hail Varsity Radio, ESPN Insider, College Game Day. Brad, want to get your take on Reggie Bush. Seems like SC and Reggie have made up. He is going to be welcomed back to SC. Ivan Mizell wrote that Reggie should get his Heisman back. I know 10 years has been a while, man, but I remember the Bush push game that season. Remember the Texas USC Rose Bowl. I remember watching before it was deemed Pac-12 after dark, the late kickoff games with SC, and just being mesmerized at Reggie Bush, how phenomenal and how fun he was to watch. Are you surprised that or maybe you're not. Maybe it seemed like 100 years instead of 10 years. But, I mean, you've covered college football. You covered those SC teams with Reggie. I think it's a nice sign that things are getting, the hatchet's getting buried, so to speak, and Reggie's back. I'm just, with SC, they got hammered. And they're a blue blood. They're a blue blood that got hammered by the NCAA.
Yeah, they did. And I don't think USC had any choice but to, kind of take down these walls because of what's happening with name, image, and likeness.
Mm-hmm.
It would be kind of like I'm not sure this will ever happen, but if baseball were to say all of a sudden, okay, it's okay to gamble on the sport, not just to gamble in general, but to gamble on games you're a part of. I'm not saying they should do that, but I'm saying if they ever did, then you kind of got to welcome back Pete Rose, right?
And so now that
the thing that Reggie Bush was alienated because of in a lot of ways, or at least certain elements of it, wouldn't necessarily be illegal going forward, then I think people already do have a different attitude about it. And so I think from that standpoint, USC didn't really have much of a choice. But on top of that, I've always felt the whole thing was ridiculous, and it was kind of abuse of power by the NCAA to kind of force USC into the position where they had to do this to begin with. Simple things like vacating a Heisman Trophy. I was there at the ceremony. I saw his name, or I heard his name called. I saw, his name announced, at the podium. I watched him walk up and accept it, and to sit there and act like it didn't happen. We've had to do subsequent Heisman shows where you have to, anything that he was involved in, the count of them is one fewer because you're not allowed to acknowledge that Reggie Bush won the Heisman Trophy, which is utterly ridiculous, and I feel the same way about vacated wins, by the way, mm-hmm. but that's another story. Let's just be honest. He was a fantastic player, and he, among a program that has put out some absolute superstars, he was one of the biggest stars that they've ever had, and just to act like he never played there, I think is ridiculous, because what he did is something that has happened over and over and over throughout the history of college football. And it was just extreme to take the position that the NCAA did on it.
Brad, a thought here. We were spending time yesterday on the tier one jobs, the tier two jobs, the tier three jobs that came out on ESPN.com, and Nebraska listed as a tier three job. And when you look at all of the data points of what goes into a job, I think Nebraska's job and program was elevated to such a high level for about a couple of different generation runs. You had the Osborne and Devaney back-to-back that made Nebraska a premier program with wins and rankings and big game moments for, you know, from 70s, 80s, 90s, and there you go. I think you had a tier one coach with Devaney and Osborne. I think they elevated the job, but I think Nebraska is a tough place to get a hire. I think, and it's not that it's bad. I mean, I went there. I love it. The point is, it's from a recruiting standpoint, and now you're still trying to get, you know, upstream in the Big Ten. There's been turnover. Where would you kind of place Nebraska? And it's interesting. You've got three programs that are kind of in the same breath now. That used to be in title contention every year, it felt like. But in reality, it's been a couple of decades since they have been. I mean, Tennessee and Miami in the same breath as Nebraska as a Tier 3 job right now. Do you agree with that assessment?
You know, I saw the headline when the article came out. I still haven't read it, so I don't know how big the tiers are. But it's funny because I see those three programs as similar but different. You know, where like I think it's very difficult to say that Miami can't recruit. You know,
exactly.
Miami's issue is more what resources. Like it's they don't have the facilities because they don't have the overall financial support because they're a small private school. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have the huge alumni base and the big stadium, and they don't even have an on-campus stadium. But the talent is everywhere around them. You know, whereas Tennessee is more like Nebraska in that within the state, there aren't nearly as many 4- and 5-star players, but Tennessee still has more than Nebraska does. And yeah, and even if you were to expand it within a, you know, 300-mile radius of the campus, you know, that Nebraska just doesn't have what, you know, some of the other schools have in order to choose from. But at the same time, I can't put Tennessee and Nebraska in the same conversation because Tennessee, at its greatest, was never Nebraska. You know, and so, I mean, Tennessee has won... I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to think of how many national titles they officially won under Neyland. But, I mean, since then, it's, what, won, 1998. I mean, I don't know how far you have to go back, you know, to find the previous one before that. But it's probably, you know, World War II era.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, so Tennessee over the last 50 years can't really hold a candle to Nebraska. But that's... yeah, that's kind of the way I see it, and I get the recruiting part because until someone comes in and shows that, okay, even though you don't have X number of 4- and 5-star recruits within a certain radius of the campus, you can still bring them in just as easily. Until someone proves that that's untrue, then I think you have to be skeptical about Nebraska, you know, being able to recover what it once was. And, I mean, we'll see. We'll see. I don't know of any examples of a similar situation where, you know, teams have been able to do that. It's tough, but you know what? It's also, things are becoming so more global because of technology. And I mean, you're seeing kids committing all over the place over the last few months who haven't even been on an official visit yet.
Right.
And look, I mean, I realize that's because of the quarantine and all that, but still it's possible there could come a day where it becomes easier to recruit to Nebraska than it has been in the last 20 years.
Brad Edwards is with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Brad, I want to move up that list on the college football coaching tiers up to Tier 1. It's got the Alabamas, Clemsons, Ohio States, those type of schools up there. The two biggest underachievers on that list right now, Texas and USC. We talked a little about USC about 10 minutes ago, talking about Reggie Bush and the sanctions. But what is causing these teams to underachieve so much after traditionally being so great?
Yeah, USC, I think you can tie it to the sanctions that followed, you know, Reggie Bush. I think that was the reason that the Pete Carroll run finally came to an end. I mean, that's completely separate from Pete Carroll leaving. Obviously, he kind of timed his exit, you know, very well. But he saw the writing on the wall. He knew what was going on, and it was only going to be able to be sustained at that level for so much longer. But I also believe if Pete Carroll had stayed, they might not have been, you know, they might not have been at the level of dominance that they were, but I don't think they would have fallen off anywhere close to where they have been. And some of it's just, you know, not hiring the right guys, and it's as simple as that. To me, it's absolutely remarkable to look at what USC did last year on the recruiting front, and I wonder how that can happen. There was a time, I'd say, you know, 25 years ago, when I believe there were certain programs that you just had to be just an absolute buffoon to not be able to win at, you know, at least win, you know, 9 or 10 games there almost every year. But I will say that over the last 25 years, almost every one of those programs at some point has had a down period where it's kind of, it's been shown that, yeah, I mean, it can happen. Now, I mean, some people would say, well, that's because we had an absolute buffoon as a head coach. But it's really happened to everybody at some point, with the exception of Ohio State. They're the one that outside of that one down year where they had, you know, Luke Fickell as the interim head coach when Tressel got forced out in the summer, they have not really had a dip. But USC is just like everybody else, and the right coach in there, USC can become a powerhouse again, because no one out west should be able to touch them when they're on the top of their game. You could say the same thing for Texas, except that Texas has so much more competition in state, especially with the SEC. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, being able to claim Texas as part of its footprint with A&M. There's no excuse for USC being what it has been in recent years.
Brad, I've got a minute. Auburn's a tier two job. An anonymous coach said it's the toughest gig. You're competing with Bama, and the fan base at Auburn's just nuts. You've had boosters that have always kind of dipped in, and that happens at a lot of places. But is that fair? Is Auburn just a thankless gig?
I mean, it is to some extent, just because of Alabama. But I do think that some of that is just, it's because of where Alabama is now.
Sure.
Like when Alabama is what it has been for the last, you know, more than a decade, and of course it was that also for quite a long time under Bear Bryant. If you can't win the state championship, you know, the fans are only going to be so happy. And look, I think it's remarkable that in the midst of this, that Auburn has won one national title and almost won another one. I mean, was just, you know, just seconds shy against Florida State of getting a second one. And so, you know, when you consider all that, I think that they've done an amazing job. I mean, top 10 classes almost every year. So they're there. If they were in a different state, I think we would feel completely different about Auburn, but because they're not, I think that's why the coaches are on the hot seat as frequently as they are.
Brad, that was fun to chat, man. Thanks for a few minutes today on the coaching tiers and thoughts on SC and in Nebraska for sure. And we'll run you down next week, man. Stay healthy and safe, all right? Thanks for a few.
Okay, you got it. Take care, guys.
See ya. There he is, Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider, College Game Day. Loved his take on kind of that triangle we talked about with the tier jobs, Miami, Tennessee, Nebraska. Some good thoughts on Nebraska. And, you know, optimism when it comes to recruiting. Jacob Padilla, up next, we'll talk some O-line on Hail Varsity.
And we're back.
Fellas, think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
All right, let's talk some Husker ball, and we say hi to Jacob Padilla, HailVarsity.com and magazine at Jacob Padilla. Underscores where you follow him on Twitter. Going to have an awesome feature in the yearbook on Greg Austin, that Husker offensive line. And Jacob, I also want to start off with you do a wonderful job with your work and your writing, bud. And thanks for a few minutes. Padding the stats, great stuff on where Nebraska can go after the departure of J.D. Spielman. And Wandale Robinson, you know the name, you saw the ability, but he's got an opportunity this upcoming season for Nebraska here. And some pretty big numbers tied to J.D., correct, when it came to touchdowns and first downs and just what he meant production-wise for Nebraska in the slot.
Yeah, obviously, J.D. Spielman has put up some massive numbers over the last 3 years. He's a really good player, real dynamic, but he's at his best in the slot, as was basically every receiver on the team that saw the field last year. I mean, you go up and down. Spielman was a slot receiver. Wandale Robinson is a slot receiver. Mike Williams was a slot receiver. Kanavai Noah was a slot receiver. Cade Warner was a slot receiver. All those guys were basically all the wideouts that played last year, and they were all best in the slot. And you kind of need to be able to have some guys that are capable of playing elsewhere and having that versatility on offense. So it wasn't the perfect fit with Spielman there and Robinson, and obviously you'd rather have the talent, but I think with some of the guys they have coming in next year, it'll allow Robinson and potentially with a more stable running game with Ramir Johnson and the incoming freshman to back up Cedric Mills. You won't need him as much there. So I think the changes to the roster will allow Robinson to kind of step into that slot receiver role and really excel in that role. And that's what you're going to need from this team to be able to move forward without Spielman.
Jacob Bedell is with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Jacob, do you have a take, or do you want to get into the little Twitter battle that's been going on? You've got response by a Mike Williams, response from a Javon McQuitty, and response about criticism and insinuation by a guy that's on Twitter. With Spielman hasn't spoke, but spoke out today on Twitter. What'd you make of all that?
Yeah, that was certainly interesting. And I don't know why people feel the need to, you can be disappointed, whatever, but when you start talking about personal things that you can't really know about and speaking out like that against players, I don't really understand kind of what your end game is there or why you tweet something like that. The initial tweet is basically taking shots at a couple of JD's friends and then somehow drawing the conclusion that JD's departure had something to do with being around them. So I don't really understand what where that guy was going with that. It was certainly interesting seeing some of the responses from McQuitty in particular. A lot of it's kind of focused on Scott Frost and with the way that the wide receivers were handled last year, and kind of said that Troy Walters took the fall for it, but Frost was the guy making all the decisions. So that was certainly interesting to see. Obviously, McQuitty is a guy that wasn't recruited by the staff. He went through a lot in his career and never really got a chance to see the field. So you got to kind of keep that in mind. But at the same time, we did see last year that they never really gave guys a chance. It was kind of the certain guys that they started with, and a lot of other guys, you never saw them go to the younger guys. You never saw them to go to a guy like McQuitty, even though the guys that were playing weren't exactly producing big numbers. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the interesting, with the combination of Lubick moving forward, all the new guys coming in and not really having a lot of options, it'll be interesting to see how different that wide receiver room looks moving forward and kind of what that depth chart looks like and how that rotation goes.
Well, and it comes down to, you know, you and I and most of the world did not get to be there Monday through Thursday for practice when it comes to building trust or proving it on the field during practice time to get into game time. And it's an unanswered question. You have what McQuitty feels like didn't happen, and you have what you kind of laid out here a little bit ago, just like you've got a lot of guys that were kind of out of position. Now, Nebraska tried to cross-train a little bit with knowing the different receiver spots versus just, you know, an X, Y, or Z on the field. When we get to your feature with the yearbook, Jacob, you spend a lot of time here on Greg Austin. Let's focus on that. The rideouts will be pretty big for Nebraska to get the full meal deal, so to speak, with what they want out of their run game. But it looks pretty promising here, and Greg Austin's ready to have more input with not just what's going to happen in the run game, but how they're going to go about doing it. And I think if you're a Nebraska fan and you're a run-the-ball guy, you can be excited with Austin's fingerprints on how the offense could go this season.
Yeah, and the theme of that, that whole room this year is going to be no excuses. At this point, they've got as much returning experience as you could hope for. You've got young guys that are trying, young talented guys that are trying to kind of break in there and are really pushing the guys ahead of them. Could end up sliding guys to their best spots on the line as they search for that best five that you always hear them talking about. And now Austin's going to have more input in how they go about doing their running their offense and which run plays that they really focus on and execute in certain situations. And so now he's got kind of a little bit louder voice in that game planning part of it. Obviously Frost is still going to call the plays, but when it's Austin's turn to speak up, he's got to have, like he said, he's got to have that play on the tip of his tongue that they practice and that he knows will work. And they're going to listen to him a little bit more now than maybe they would in the past. So with the players they've got, with Austin heading into his third year here and now with the extra responsibility on his plate, they've got everything that they need to. Now they just have to go out and do it. They've got to execute. They've got to improve. They've got to find a way to get this offense off and running, especially with everything they lost in the trenches on the defensive side of the ball. The offense is going to have to step forward this year and carry the team forward like we expected it would when Scott Frost arrived.
Jacob, the offensive line struggled at the beginning of last year, but really seemed to gel as the year went on. How different do you think this offensive line will look come week one, or do you think it's going to be pretty similar to what we saw at the end of last year?
Yeah, the loss of the spring really complicates that situation. Greg Austin basically said, ideally, it would be great for the team if Bryce Benhart was able to take that right tackle spot in, if Matt Farniok was able to move inside the guard and play that left guard spot, and then you've got the three other returning starters at the other spots. Now they haven't really gotten the chance to get those practice reps in to show the coaches that, hey, this is what the best five looks like. So that's going to come down to how the players perform in this fall camp. And obviously it would have been a lot better to have the full spring of work under their belt heading into this, so they really had an idea of where they wanted guys, and then they could just start at the beginning of the fall and put everybody in place and just focusing on really kind of hammering it home. Now they're going to have to use that part of that spring ball part of that fall camp for that discovery process to find out, all right, is this guy ready? All right, where does this guy fit best? They're going to have to be able to do that and then fast track that development. So this is a group that you're definitely going to hope that by conference play, once you start getting into that, they'll be settled. Or it could be where they do go back to just the same five that we had last year, fall back on that comfort and hope that another year in the program will allow those guys to kind of carry the improvement forward and allow them to do what they need to for this team.
Jacob, Greg Austin is the leader of the offensive line, but on the field, are there any players on the offensive line that have taken control and taken that leadership spot for their peers along that offensive line?
Yeah, and that's a big part of my feature too, is kind of focusing on there are two leaders in that room. It's Matt Farniok. He's been the more vocal guy. He's been a guy that's played a lot of football at Nebraska and isn't afraid to speak up. And then it's Brendan Hymus, who has been Nebraska's best lineman for a few years now. And Greg Austin talked about Hymus. He thought Hymus could have been an NFL draft pick had he declared this year, but that they had a brief conversation about it, didn't go so far as him even submitting his name for a grade. He's just like, you know what, I'm going to come back. And I'm coming back with a purpose. It's not to improve my stock. It's to leave this place in a much better spot and kind of get this offensive line to where it needs to be. And so it sounds like Hymus is really, really embracing that leadership role and is trying to become more vocal and trying to kind of grow into that all-around leader that Nebraska needs, because teams are at their best when their best players are their most vocal and are their leaders. And Hymus is definitely the cornerstone of that line. And so if he's able to kind of step up and be that vocal as well as that vocal leader, as well as lead by example alongside Farniak, I think he'll be in a good spot there.
Jacob, I've got just a minute, but did you enjoy your chat with Verz as part of your feature?
Yeah, I always enjoy talking with Verz. I figured speaking out of other sources here, there's not a guy that knows the pipeline better, that knows local talent better, that knows kind of what's going on with the program better, and is able to kind of communicate what his feelings are about all that. So anytime I get a chance to talk to Verz for a relevant story, I'll definitely hit him up.
Verz is good stuff. 30 seconds. Have you had much interaction with Fedoni at all? I mean, just through your basketball circles?
No, I have not.
Okay. Well, we're just wondering if Nebraska may be in the driver's seat. A lot of peer recruiting, Jacob, going on with Fedoni and a lot of kids that are part of Nebraska's class already. It'll be an interesting duel to see play out for this highly coveted tight end. Jacob, fantastic work, man. Thanks for sharing some thoughts and talking some O-line with us. Can't wait to read it, and have a good rest of your week, man. Appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Take care. That's Jacob Padilla with us on Hail Varsity Radio.
Speaking of peer recruiting, you see what Heinrich Harburg just tweeted? Welcome to the land of the Giants with the corn emoji.
All right.
So who's maybe a silent commit?
Embo? Embow? Is that the guy out of Wisconsin?
Who knows? I don't know.
Maybe.
Could be Fedoni.
Greg Smith knows. We'll get you a jock doc here in a minute.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio at Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Doug Tavis with us. Dr. Doug, how you doing?
Doing pretty good, Chris. How are you?
Doing all right, man. I'm waiting for baseball to get handled. I'm anxious for travel ball to get rolling with Junior's team. But for now, I'm going to have to settle for the Maguire-Sosa home run chase on ESPN 30 for 30 with the upcoming documentary here Sunday night. And 1998, one of my favorite baseball years ever. And part of that was not only Sosa Maguire, but also Kerry Wood. And I'll never forget coming home from class. Yeah, I went to class, Dr. Doug, and watching the end of his 20 strikeout performance against the Astros in May. Kerry Wood had a great year his rookie season, but obviously he had arm trouble throughout his career following that season. And the topic of pitch counts became very real for baseball post-1998. Let's go there today with the Jock Doc. And Dr. Doug, you know pitch counts and you know the stress that happens on elbows. We've done a lot of different athletes and Tommy John surgeries for baseball players. And, you know, just kind of stress the overuse and the damage that can be done, not only to young arms, but to major league arms, like a guy like Kerry Wood that was so electric when he was good.
Yeah, when he came out there in 98, it was amazing. And then all of a sudden it was, where did he go? Mm-hmm. Where did this guy go, you know? Because, the arm troubles just continued for the guy. There is no question that Major League Baseball, youth baseball, everybody involved has been searching for this holy grail of what is it that, leads to the arm injury issues. And as you said, the 98 season with Wood, kind of highlighted that pitch count piece. There's been some reasonably good data to say that, especially in the younger arms, that pitch counts do matter. There is anecdotal evidence about certain types of pitches. And when I say anecdotal evidence, I mean indications, trends, but not as hard of statistical data as what has been able to be compiled with pitch counts. And that makes some sense. And the reason it makes sense is because, you know, you can count them and you can have a number. When you say, is a curveball a problem for a kid versus throwing a changeup? Well, every kid out there, your junior, you know, included, every kid out there throws that curveball differently and has different stresses on his arms, or you know, whether they, you know, throw a crazy changeup, you know, that where his wrist pronates, you know, as part of his changeup. All of these things are very, very difficult to quantify. The one thing that hasn't been as difficult to quantify is pitch counts, and so that's why there's been such an emphasis for it.
Dr. Doug Tavis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, at Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking pitch counts in baseball in reference to 1998. Kerry Wood's phenomenal season, and then more of a shift by baseball to go back to pitch counts post 98, as you had so many young arms come up. I think of Mark Pryor with the Cubs. I think of a number of arms that maybe got overused. And Dr. Doug, from a medical standing and just your own experience, being a baseball dad too, you know, what's that right age for kids to start experimenting with the breaking stuff, or is there a right age?
That one is a piece that has been very difficult, but I will say that one of the best pieces of data that I've really come across has to do with the Atlanta Braves during the 90s. The Braves medical staff really tried to go back and query their major league players and their minor league players as to when they started throwing the different kinds of pitches. And so with their major league pitchers, what they found was that those individuals didn't start throwing curveballs until they were 15 on average. And they didn't start throwing sliders until they were 17 on average. Those were the two pitches that they were able to kind of pick out. With their minor league players, they found that those individuals started throwing those same pitches a year to a year and a half younger than what their major leaguers did. Mm. And the point that they were making was that the younger that they started throwing, the more problems that they had with their elbows as they progressed on through, and that the concern was that was stopping some of these younger guys from making it out of the minors into the major leagues. So that was a very interesting piece. So when you think about where it's at with the kids that are playing in select ball now, there's really still a big quandary. There's still a big debate as to when somebody can go ahead and start throwing the various breaking balls. What hasn't changed, though, as a baseball dad, you'll appreciate mm-hmm. the reality that what hasn't changed is that if you can put the ball on the corners, it doesn't really matter whether it's a fastball, a changeup, or a breaking pitch, you're still going to be able to beat that batter. And so the way I've approached it professionally and then also approached it with my own family has been, let's get that mastered first, and then we'll worry about throwing breaking balls later.
Right on. Get the old outside corner, paint the black, and let's get a changeup developed. Let's get a fastball, and let's get that location hammered down, Dr. Doug. I'm working with Ricky Vaughn, unfortunately, on the control part, but not the haircut, so... we're talking pitch counts and stresses on some of those young phenoms that burst onto the scene back in 1998 and maybe a little after, and baseball shifted to more of a pitch count. And as we wrap up here, Dr. Duck, it makes sense that franchises would would shift to that, doesn't it? Because of even if you're signing the Kerry Wood out of high school, you're still, even for market value back then, paying a ton of money up front for the investment.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that they've got to protect these players, given the numbers that are, you know, that are out there for the signing bonuses and the salaries. But you know, as you watch through the last 10, 15 years, seeing that the middle reliever concept [S2] Yep. [S1] Really blossom, bringing guys. The starters out of the games in the, in the fifth and sixth innings, and then getting those middle relievers in there. That's what that's all about. I mean, they're trying to win games. They're trying to, they're trying to show the batters a different arm. And it's, the Royals were great at it, right? When they won the, when they won the World Series. But a big, big part of that is how are we going to protect these starters' arms so that we can keep those guys going over the course of a long career, not just this, one or two years and done kind of a thing.
Dr. Doug, thanks for the chat today.
You bet. You take care, Chris.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time, a Wednesday, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Many thanks to Brad Edwards, Jacob Padilla, Mike Babcock, Mike Shuhart. Tomorrow we're loaded up as well. Bill Bender's Sporting News going to be with us. Jerry DiNardo, Uncle Jerry, will be back from the Big Ten Network. Brandon Vogel and the Pride of Chicago from the desert, Danny Burke. I've never called him Daniel. Maybe I'll try that tomorrow.
Is his given name Daniel? I guess it'd be...
Is it Danny or Dan or Daniel?
I guess I don't know.
Because if it's the middle name...
These are the hard-hitting questions we need to ask him tomorrow.
You go, actually, no. I mean, the casinos are open. I want to know if he
that
lost...
That is true.
I want to know if he lost his ass at the blackjack table last weekend or not.
I want to know if I should keep my MGM Resorts stock in the stock market or not.
Or we can just find out what he truly thinks of Big Ten leanings right now. Mm. I had to check in with my wife during the commercial break. That was a highlight of my day. And I'm trying to lobby. I shouldn't have to lobby. Saying, what do you want to do for dinner? And she's like, I don't know. Like, well, we can go somewhere. She's like, well, I don't know if anything's open. It's like, places are open now. Mm-hmm. We can go out.
Yeah, you can.
It's like, well...
But she probably wants college football. She probably wants to keep her social distancing, so... So there's college football this year, and she can see less of you.
Sure. that's the damn truth. Now, I said, well, Shuey told me the wind's dying down. She's like, really? Has he been in our backyard? I'm like, well, no. Bottom line here is I got a lobby to grill. Because I want to stop by the store and pick something up. And I think grilling's an all right idea tonight. But if it's 1,000 miles an hour still, I don't know. It kind of sucks to try and grill when it's that windy.
Well, I was thinking about going and playing basketball tonight. And I was also going to, that's the first thing I was doing whenever I leave here is check the wind. If not, it's going to be, I think, spaghetti and garlic bread at my house tonight.
Yeah, spaghetti might be a decent call. I would love to go somewhere. Maybe I'll make that audible coming up. I don't know. So you're doing spaghetti tonight?
I think that's the plan.
Do you
this
do
summer,
your own meatballs, or do you just go with spaghetti sauce and noodles?
That's just going to be spaghetti sauce, noodles, and garlic bread. And maybe some peas or green beans or something. I've been getting into those a little bit. The key is just you got to add butter.
Add a lot of a lot of butter and a little salt and pepper. Do you get the steamer bag, or do you have a garden?
Steamer bag, usually.
Those are so good.
But I was meaning to plant some peas this year, because peas, when they're in like the little snap peas,
yeah.
Oh, fry those up with a little butter in a pan.
Have you experimented with stir fry ever?
I have not.
Neither have I. Not bright enough. Looks good though.
No,
fired up.
No, I haven't done that. I've been trying to get more into the whole vegetables thing. It's not very fun. But it's, I mean, with this summer.
Aside from the 7 pounds of sour cream and butter and bacon you throw on a potato.
Well, that's the most fun part.
The diversity of the vegetable.
It's like whenever you have a steak dinner, you have some greens so the plate looks nice.
Green beans are great.
Yeah.
You need lots of olive oil and you need to snap the ends off and you need lots of butter.
Yeah, I'm thinking.
Make them as unhealthy as possible.
And the thing is, I think it's a healthy summer, so I might not be able to enjoy my vegetables this year.
Yeah. Do some yams.
Ooh, I love yams. Yams are good.
Olive oil and hot sauce. See ya.